totally natural thing, and it's like very, very healthy. And it's beautiful. Like, you connect, like, you're out there looking at the mountains all around, and nature, like Tweety birds flying by while you're bathing. You're not sealed off.
G'day and welcome. This is the Hunting Republic podcast, the podcast where we discuss all things hunting and outdoors. So if you love hunting, camping, fishing, hiking, bushwalking, full driving, or just being in the outdoors, then we reckon you've come to the right place. My name is Luke. I will be your host, and I can't wait to have you along for the journey. So please enjoy this edition of the Hunting Republic podcast. This episode of the Hunting Republic podcast is sponsored by Gun Traders Australia, www.guntraders.com.au. Whether you're buying, selling, or just staying connected with the shooting and hunting community, Gun Traders is the place for you. Gun Traders is about connection, community, and is supporting Australian hunters, shooters, and local businesses. So jump on over, guntraders.com.au, and catch up with Carly and Glenn and support an awesome place for firearms owners in Australia. G'day team, and welcome to another episode of the Hunting Republic podcast. It has been a very long time, and I have been very busy doing lots of stuff. And I have not had time to manage to put into making more episodes. For that, I apologize, but we have to do life, and things get in the way, things have to take a back seat, and other things have to take priority at certain times. I wanted to put this episode together to share with anyone who'd care to listen the story of my hunt on the red deer in this year's Raw. It is a story that some of you may have read, either in the Wild Deer magazine, the most recent issue, or on the Bowhunters forum, where I've also posted the story and a few photos. If you have read it, I hope you enjoyed it. I tried to put in as much meaning and passion and feeling as I could to relate not only the story or the events of the hunt and how it came to be, but what it meant to me and what it means to me. I also felt that I'd take the opportunity to record this as an episode of the podcast, and hopefully communicate to you through my own voice what it means in my own terms, I suppose, because it does mean a hell of a lot. So I've read the story as per I have written it, and I hope that you enjoy listening along. If you haven't been able to get out and grab a copy of the magazine, please do so. Please support the Wild Deer Mag. Dan does a hell of a good job, and the team there at Wild Deer. And our magazine print is a precious commodity these days, more and more and more are disappearing from our shelves because we don't consume the hard copies anymore. We consume on our screens, and I would encourage everyone to go out and please buy a copy, not just because my story is in it, but to support Dan. He's been a massive presence in our industry and in our pastime over the years, and it would be a shame to see that magazine and that team disappear. So please go out. If you can find a copy, get one. If you can't, chuck $100 at it and get your yearly subscription. You know, we drink more than that in coffee in a few months. So, let's support someone's business and a team's income, and people who do it for the love of the sport and the industry, and let's get out there and do the right thing and help out. Anyway, that's enough ramble. I hope you enjoy my tale. And I hope somehow it inspires you, maybe encourages you to make that connection with your own cultural heritage, mine being through bow hunting and my father. But you'll hear about that
in the rest of the episode. It's about half an hour long, so please grab yourself a cold one or a coffee or something. Please enjoy and reach out, get in touch, like, subscribe, do all those things. And if you have any questions about any of it, please absolutely feel free to get in touch. I'm always more than happy to help wherever I can. Catch you on the other side, guys.
Smells have a unique and extremely powerful ability to initiate a flood of flashbacks and recollections unmatched by any other medical process. That is, the sense of smell is the strongest stimulant of human memory because of the direct connection of the olfactory system with the hippocampus and the amygdala areas of the brain. These are the areas responsible for emotional processing and recall. Port Orford cedar, the wood, and boning fletchtite, the glue, both synonymous with arrow making through the 1970s and 1980s, and both absolutely unique in their aroma. It is the early 1980s, and my father, a bow hunter since the mid-1970s and co-founder of the Mount Isa Bow Hunting Club, sits and painstakingly crafts his hunting arrows. 30 inches long, typically flame orange in shaft colour, with hot pink and blue turkey feathers for fletching. At the fletched end, a blue nock, and at the business end, a razor-sharp Davies broadhead, both meticulously aligned with the spine of the arrow to allow for perfect flight. The process of tapering the ends of the arrows for gluing of the nocks and broadheads requires the use of a large pencil sharpener type device, the result of which are piles of shavings from which arises the most amazing aroma of pure nature foresty smells, earthen and fresh, strong, yet not overpowering, piney and rich. The gluing itself brings a tangy scent that stings the nostrils, almost the antithesis of the warmth of that from the cedar, but every bit as unforgettable. It was as a boy of perhaps only 3 or 4 years old living in central Queensland that some of my earliest memories would be forever chained to the smell of these two scents as I played about the house while my father went about his craft. And it was in this space that hunting, in particular bow hunting, was imprinted not only onto my genes and my psyche, but indeed onto my very being and soul. As I finished checking over my gear, I slipped my backpack on and reached for my bow. I felt at home. More times than you've had hot dinners. That's how many times I have done this now. Comfortable and familiar. Excited, yet content. Those hunting feelings that I now wore like fingerprints some 27 years since my very first serious bow hunt as a teenager, chasing rabbits and pigs with my father and my best mate Dave. I nodded at Scott. "You good, mate?" To which he replied, "Good to go." And we turned to head into the mountains. The target species was red deer, and we were here seeking our redemption. 2024 had been our first visit to this property. The roar that year was highly unpredictable. The weather was unusual, with warmer temperatures seemingly unwilling to yield to the new, cooler autumn season. Rain was sporadic but ever-present. Conditions were extremely humid and overcast, and we didn't go a day without being rained on while in the field. Stags would moan, mumble, and quite occasionally roar, but patterning and predicting was nigh impossible. We had no choice but to put our shoulder to the wheel and work the grind. We were hunting with Tyler Chubb of Ironbark Outfitters, a professional guide with whom Scott had hunted several times previously. A Canadian national, Tyler had guided Scott in both the Northern Territory, targeting feral pigs and buffalo, and in Newfoundland, Canada, chasing moose and woodland caribou. Scott had spoken extremely highly of Tyler, and I was keen to learn all I could from his extensive experience, as I had only limited the opportunity to hunt red deer to this point. It was on Thursday afternoon, the fourth day of hunting, that I would get a front row seat to the fruits of his years of hunting and guiding experience. We had set out on a huge walk, heading up towards the back of the property to hunt through some of the least accessible and least disturbed gullies and ridges that were known to hold good stags. It was going to be hard yakka, not only for the distance, but also the punishing terrain and the toll of the previous days of hunting. After nearly an hour of uphill slog and a profuse amount of sweating, we crested the ridge and engaged
hyper-stealth mode, dropping onto a game trail which paralleled some 30 to 40 metres below the top. Although the persistent rains were the bane of our existence that week, it made our footfall all but completely silent and our movement almost shadow-like as we scanned ahead for any sign of deer. Moving forward, with Tyler leading, we scanned, paused, listened, moved, scanned, paused, listened, and repeated. Slowly we transitioned along the pad and after some time we were rewarded with the sound of a small bachelor mob of spikers moving through some low regrowth saplings approximately 40 metres above us. We were advantaged with cover, wind and trail, but disadvantaged by the undergrowth which obscured a clear shooting lane. The mob was traversing parallel to the ridgeline much the same as we were, browsing here and there as they went. Their antics and interactions were amusing us, like typical teenage boys testing each other and sorting out their pecking order. Keeping our heads down, we hatched a plan to intercept them where it appeared their line would cross the game trail that we were on. Soon enough, we rounded a corner and we could see where this would occur. There would be a momentary opportunity through a triangular window about 30 metres out in front of me in the timber, no more than a foot or so along each side where I could thread an arrow. As the first spiker crossed the game trail, I drew and took my aim. I knew he wasn't going to be my target animal and I had to remain patient. The second spiker crossed the trail and then the third. I held steady. Then the fourth. But this guy paused. That was all I needed. His choice to stop had put his vitals directly in line with my sight pin at 43 metres and I let the arrow loose. All 80 pounds of my Hoyt Factor 30 slammed into top gear, sending the arrow screaming off the string. As it left the bow, I was confident in my execution and watching it fly, I was happy that I had done the best I could. Now here is where we pause and I tell you about this thing that I call Luke Luck. It's like my own little Murphy. You know, Murphy's Law. If stuff can go pear-shaped, it will. Yeah, him. See, this bloke sits on my shoulder and, well, decides to play havoc with my best laid intentions and plans and much to my malign frustration has repeatedly accompanied me on my hunting journey over the years. Well, as it turns out, Luke Luck at this point decided he too wanted in on the action and made his presence known by way of an unseen twig in the shadows and directly in the path of my arrow. As twig and arrow met and deflections occurred, so too did any hope of harvesting that deer. As the arrow deviated to land harmlessly in the dirt above the deer, the young spikers decided to hastily depart the scene for safer pastures. Tyler and I could only stand and watch as they ran up and over the ridgeline and out of sight. After gathering myself up, making significant efforts to control my disappointment, Tyler and I decided to continue making our way along the game trail. As the wind was still in our favour, we still had a good amount of light remaining, and we both felt we could not have disturbed any deer that might still be further up ahead. Up until this point, we had not tried calling or roaring any stags, so we chose to try our luck with a few roars. It was almost a shock when Tyler's calls were replied to by what was immediately obvious as a very cranky and very territorial stag. His bellows echoed around the gullies like a drill sergeant admonishing a poorly dressed soldier on parade. We looked at each other, wide eyes locked. We knew it was game on. Traversing the trail in the direction of the stag, our eyes and ears were straining to detect the slightest hint of his exact location. We rounded another gully and Tyler let out another call, this time a little more aggressive with intent to tell the stag, "We are here, we mean business, and it's time to throw down." His reply left us with no uncertainty that he too was not backing down. We inched forward along the trail, Tyler perhaps 8 or so metres ahead of me, a spur leading steeply up to our right to the ridgeline. As we crept around it, suddenly with tones of urgency, Tyler whispered, "Deer!" And while doing so, dropped to take a knee. Instinctively, I did likewise, my bow in front of me, arrow nocked and ready to draw. It was at this point I saw the stag. He was coming, and he was coming at a great rate of knots with obvious intent. As he charged down the spur, eagerly seeking the challenging stag who dared enter his domain, I drew my bow. The distance between us closed in what seemed like a split second, and before I'd realised it, he was pulling up, hitting the bicks hard and coming to a screeching halt at just 19 metres where he stood glaring at me. I was on his patch, and he was not happy about it. As I lined him up through my peep sight, every single one of my pins filled his chest. At this distance, I was extremely confident. Bows had been in my hands literally since before I could clearly remember, and anything at this distance was like fish in a barrel. That is, until Luke Luck turns up. What I had failed to see in my haste to reduce my presence as I dropped to a knee was the small eucalyptus regrowth measuring only 1 meter or so high, which was about 2 meters directly between myself and the stag. Now, it's a thing that when you draw a bow and look through your peep aligning your sights, you have a gap error caused by your arrow sitting lower on your bow than your sights. Obviously, the point of aim is where the gap is reduced to zero, but anything before that point is where the arrow's trajectory differs from the line of sight of the pins, and it was this difference where, yet again, Luke Luck turned up. As I settled in for the shot, all of my pins crowded into the stag's chest. There was no need to aim. From an 80-pound bow at 19 metres, my arrows shoot practically flat, and with tens of thousands of arrows practiced directing my movement like instinct, I again let fly. Here's the part where you already know something is going to go pear-shaped, and, as alluded to earlier, it involved my arrow clipping the unseen eucalyptus regrowth and deflecting. It also involved the arrow colliding so forcefully with the antlers of the stag that the resulting sound was not dissimilar to that of a gunshot. A crack so loud that Tyler and I were left utterly confused as to what exactly had happened. Once again, we see the stag run off, the hunter crushed, scratching his head in disbelief, looking for the arrow and any other sign in an attempt to decipher what exactly happened. Luke Luck had struck yet again, and despite another huge effort hunting the following day, it was to be the last chance I would get at a deer for the 2024 Raw. We interrupt this episode of the Hunting Republic podcast to bring you a word from our sponsors. This episode of the Hunting Republic podcast is sponsored by Brackenware. Our mission is to optimize your performance with premium technical outdoor and hunting apparel. We have deliberately hand-chosen advanced technical fabrics based on durability, weight, and quietness. Our pattern has been custom designed with every component and feature rigorously tested in the field by experienced hunters to ensure the precise fit, comfort, durability and performance that you demand from premium technical gear. Research, design and development has been ongoing since 2012, and today's Brackenware reflects our commitment to giving you nothing but the best. Premium technical gear designed, used and trusted by experienced hunters the world over. Get yours at brackenware.com. As Scott and I fell into familiar stride, we walked in silence. It was the first afternoon of our 2025 Red Deer Hunt, and we knew what our plan was. We were hunting unguided this year, as Tyler had been unable to travel to Australia for the Raw, yet had graciously arranged for us to hunt the property despite his absence. We were each doing what hunters do instinctively, checking the wind direction, observing the sun and remaining daylight hours, listening for any signs of deer and looking intently for familiar shapes and movements. We knew where we were headed and the plan of action once we got there. Turning to head up the mountain, we leaned into the slope and bore down on the effort. We were adamant that no task would be beyond us in our crusade for a deer this year. Despite the exertion of the climb, we seemed to arrive at our target location in short time, although the searing lactic burn in our legs told us otherwise. We broached the small clearing on the south side of the ridge and found a spot to sit. Our position saw us looking out towards the south with the wind in our faces coming up from below and heading up and over the ridge behind us. Our plan was to wait for stags to roar and use this to pinpoint their location and make an attempt to close the distance, hoping to execute an effective stalk and shot. It was approximately 4:30 p.m. We sat. We waited. We sat. We waited. And we waited. And we sat. And we waited some more. 4:50 p.m. Upon hearing no sign of stags at all, we opted to take the initiative and let out a few groans, as Tyler had shown us the year before. Scott put his roaring tube to his mouth and did his best impersonation. Now, considering the fact that we both rate ourselves as absolute rank amateurs when it comes to red deer, you can imagine our amazement when not a matter of mere minutes later, his call was replied to by a stag over on the other side of the ridge behind us. We turned and looked at each other, mouths open, eyes wide and heart rates increasing. No way. He sounded fairly close, perhaps less than 100 to 150 metres away, and he sounded mighty upset with the newcomer making all this noise on his hill. We checked the wind. Bugger. It wasn't favourable at all. Blowing, as I said, into our faces, and of course, here was the stag up and over the ridge to our backs. We quickly hatched a plan. We get up and onto the ridge to check the wind there. Given the way it can complacently swirl and circle around in the gullies and ridges, and hopefully it would be better. As we topped the ridge, we heard another roar. This time closer, and this time we definitely knew he was ready to make a scene, but frustratingly, the wind was no better up on the top. What would we do? Okay, we quickly shaped our next plan. Over the paddock fence onto the same side as the stag, we descend perhaps 30 metres, enough to hopefully have our scent blown across and above the stag's elevation, and skirt around him to gain favourable wind to effect a stalk. We nodded in agreement, and it was sorted. Scott went over the fence first while I held on to his bow, and then I passed him mine and followed. Upon being handed my bow back, I removed an arrow from my quiver, knocked it on the string, and attached my release aid, as is my habit when in thicker scrub and when my spidey senses tingle. Scott was a few metres behind me up the slope to the west. We were moments from moving up higher as per our plan when I, for some reason, turned and faced down the ridge, and it was then that I saw him. The instant my conscious brain managed to compute what my subconscious had realised moments before and when my mouth was capable of forming the words, as tersely as Tyler had said it to me the year before, I whispered to Scott, "Deer!" My brain was in hyperdrive. In less than a second, I had worked out that this was the very same stag that had been raging at us only a few minutes earlier. He had not only pinpointed our location from just a couple of roars, but he had silently traversed the tangle of lantana and scrub in his gully, ascended a slope of vicious gradient, and closed the distance to us completely undetected and in no time at all. And we had been lucky enough that the wind somehow had not managed to give us away. Again, instinctively, I dropped to a knee and drew my bow. I settled in and took range. He was quartering on, looking slightly upwards towards his right, at us in our elevated position higher up the ridge. I knew he had antlers, but how many points, how long, etc., I had no clue. My mind raced back to the year before. The circumstances were slightly different, but oh so similar. My peep sight was filled with deer, and my pins filled his chest. It had all happened so quickly, and yet again here I was at full draw on a stag with hardly a moment's preparation. I focused. I floated the pin on the point at the front of his shoulder and without any hesitation loosed the arrow. The 21-metre gap was closed in milliseconds and the arrow was gone. The stag spun on the spot and vanished into the gully he had silently materialised from. 6, 10, maybe 12 steps was all that was heard and then complete and utter silence. No crash. No crunch. No startled birds or snapping branches, and certainly nothing that sounded like a downed deer. Time stood still. What had just happened? Did it just happen? Was that real? Wait, was that actually real? The violent thumping in my chest and the deafening noise of blood in my ears told me it was very real. I rose and slowly turned to look at Scott. The expression of sheer astonishment on his face also told me it was real, and the expletives we were both uttering in disbelief confirmed it for sure. It had all just happened, and it had taken no more than 5 seconds. From seeing the deer to the arrow hitting him. It was like a lifetime in a blink, and we now had a job to do. It was 5 p.m, and we were rapidly running out of light. We must find this stag. We took a moment and settled ourselves. Okay. Find the arrow. Find the blood. Start the tracking. We moved over to where he was hit. No blood. This isn't good, but it's not the worst. Okay, where's the arrow? We looked around. We traced the line of the shot. Was it a pass-through? Did I hit him cleanly? It did sound odd, so where did I actually hit him? We looked around, left, right, in front and past where he was hit. No arrow. Okay, now I'm a bit worried. Don't stress, Luke. Luke Luck isn't turning up this time. Just follow the process. What's next? Where did he run? What was his line? Find the path of least resistance. Scott, you go right, I'll go left, down the hill into the gully, and we'll look for disturbances and hoof prints. I slowly moved 15 metres down, 20 metres, 30 metres, desperately seeking any sign at all as to where he went. I think I can see a path he might have taken. I see some scuff marks in the ground. They look fresh. I head back to find Scott. He confirms that he's had no luck. I mention that I thought I had some scuff marks and what looked to be a path. We pause for a moment and decide to both head further down to the left and combine our efforts. They might be ugly, but surely two of our heads are better than one. We turn and head down. As I get back to the 30-metre mark and round a large lantana scrub, I look down and to my left further as the path seems to go. I pause and look back up at Scott. At this moment, I turn back and resume my search, glancing to the lower right, and that's when I see it. A shape. A colour that doesn't fit. A tone that doesn't compute. It's not a log. It's not a bush. It's not a pig. Wait, what? No, how can it be? For the second time in only minutes, my brain is computing things faster than my conscious thought can keep up with. It was at the moment that two again aligned that the wave of realization hit me. It was the stag. He was down. Holy crap. I turned to Scott. Hey, mate, look over there. Where, mate? I can't see anything, said Scott. There, mate, under the lantana, down there. Wait, what? Says Scott. Yep, that's him, mate. That's the stag. It was an epic moment. We just stood there looking. I'm sure both of our mouths were gaping in utter disbelief, and for the second occasion, once again, I'm sure that time momentarily stood still. I knocked an arrow. The stag wasn't moving, but I wasn't taking a single second to let Luke Luck turn up and leave me empty-handed yet again. I crept down. He didn't breathe. There was no movement of the chest. I crept down closer. Only a few meters away now. I took a few more steps, knees and hands both shaking. I was close enough to poke him with my arrow. No response. I placed my arrow in my quiver and put my bow down and breathed. He had landed facing downhill, head tucked in under the thick stand of lantana. I moved around and below him to free him from the entanglement. As I cleared the vines and branches, I came to realize that I had just taken as best a free-range animal as I could hope for. Superbly even, long and wide, with six impressive points on each side, he was a veritably majestic stag, and I was humbled to have conquered him in his own domain. We exchanged handshakes and backslaps. We grinned and we laughed as we each related how it had unfolded from our own perspective. We took photos and recorded some video to immortalize the moment for eternity. We then set about the task of caping and quartering. Not only did I want to make sure we could retrieve as much meat as possible and to share the bounty with Scott, but I wanted to prepare this magnificent stag for a place on my wall, something I had been waiting for over a quarter of a century to do. In the heat and humidity that we found ourselves, this was no small task. The slope he had expired on was significantly steep, and as much as we tried, there was no chance of the two of us relocating him. We worked together, often one of us just holding and stabilizing the stag to prevent him rolling or sliding down the hillside. It was during this process that the lethality of the shot was revealed to us. The arrow had entered into his right shoulder, passing through his right lung and continued decimating his aorta, finally coming to rest inside the rear pelvic bone. The full and entire length of arrow was inside the stag, and this explained why there was no arrow to be found when we were searching for it, and also why there was no blood trail, as we soon found extensive volumes of blood pooled in his internal cavity. It was with much effort and perseverance that we finally finished the job 3 very long, very humid, and extremely sweaty hours later. We had him caped, quartered and portioned into meat bags ready to transport back to camp. Both of us agreed it had been one of the most challenging field dressing efforts we had ever experienced as we sat and paused for a deliberate moment of reflection and rest. Our plan was to first relocate the dressed quarters to the top of the ridgeline some 60 metres above us, to then return for our gear along with the cape and head. We set about doing so, and it was during this process that each of us realised how badly exhausted and severely dehydrated we actually were. It became immediately apparent that the task of taking all the meat back to camp, along with the cape and head, was far beyond our physical capabilities in our current circumstances. With the meat relocated to the top of the ridge, we headed back down to my pack, secured the cape and head, loaded up and grabbed our bows. Taking one last look around, we started the trek back. If you were to tell me that a hike back to camp that is almost entirely downhill would be one of the toughest things I'd ever do in my life before that day, you'd be forgiven for making me laugh at you. The state we were in that night, however, proved me so very wrong. Extreme humidity and heat had caused us to lose copious amounts of sweat, and our bodies were suffering terribly.
Significant physical weakness made every step a challenge. Lightheadedness was affecting our balance, and unrelenting stomach cramps and nausea were the result of severe dehydration and electrolyte imbalance. To add insult to injury, our torches were starting to fail, and regularly we would ingest one of the thousands of bugs attracted to our lights, causing us to dry reach. Repeatedly and frequently, we had to pause to rest, often hands on knees bent over, eyes closed, trying to ease the stomach cramps and rest our backs. The cape and head would have amounted to 20 or 30 kilos at least, and my pack and bow had never felt so incredibly heavy before. My water bladder had run empty not long after leaving the top of the mountain, and my mouth was so desperately dry. I was so completely exhausted and feeling so crook that twice I had to stop and actually lay down on my side as best I could with a deer cape and head full rack tied to my pack. The second time, even Scott joined me, and we both agreed sleeping there for the night may not have been such a bad option. But stubbornly, and with much encouragement back and forth between us, the drive and determination to see the task completed forced us to keep going, and we pushed on despite the discomfort and exhaustion. We finally made it back to camp 2 hours later. We were utterly and completely shattered in every single sense of the word, but we were finally back. It took less than 5 seconds to shoot him, but 5 hours had passed since I'd made the shot. High on our list was rehydration, and we each smashed down a couple of Gatorades. I swear a drink had never tasted so good. We then showered and changed. Fortunately, the taxidermist wasn't a drive too far, and with a 24-hour chiller accessible, we were on a mission to drop off the cape and head. A short drive later, and that taken care of, we were able at last to put our feet up and fully reflect on a truly incredible event. Recounting this tale, the events of the hunt, how it unfolded, and all the years of hunting leading up to it, I feel it is an achievement I wasn't able to fully comprehend while in the moment. It was not until Scott asked me to talk a bit about it on camera that I realized a hunting journey of 27 years had led me to that point. That it had taken me that long to realize the dream of this remarkable red stag, and that those 27 years were due to my father's passion for bow hunting and the way I had been exposed to it and brought up around it as a young boy. My father was a bow hunter before I was even born, and I am sure that has played no small part in all of this. I have also realized the huge part that genuinely good people play in our hunting journeys. Hunting partners and mates like Scott and authentic people like Tyler, whom I can't thank enough. And in Queensland too, where we can only hunt on private property with permission, those property owners who give us hunters a chance and graciously allow us freedom to be on their land. Finally, our families. Hunting in family is connection and cultural heritage, and this intangible cultural heritage is transmitted from generation to generation. In his own pursuits as a hunter, my father connected me to this land, and through that channel, he also connected me to my ancestry. It's Port Orford cedar, the wood, and Boning Fletchtite, the glue. It's the memories of a 4-year-old boy. It's redemption. The harvesting of a magnificent red stag, which will one day become memories of an old man. It's bow hunting and memories. It's my cultural heritage. Well, there we go, team. Another episode in the bag, albeit one full of my waffle. I hope you enjoyed that tale. And I hope that, as I said in the intro, it inspires and encourages you to get out in the field and maybe even to drag someone else along with you, be that a newbie to the sport or a mate you haven't seen in a while or your kids, to encourage them to connect through hunting and enjoy and experience all of those things that it has to offer on so many different levels. If you'd like to see some of the photos, as I said, or the images of the stag, and a few of my father and his early hunting escapades, please grab a copy of the Wild Deer Mag. Or if you want, you can log on to join up to the Bowhunters Group of Australia forums and see it posted there. But soon I'll be sharing some of it on social media, and when I get the
the stag from the taxidermist, I will be sure to share a few photos of him proudly adorning my wall. Stay safe out there, everybody. Enjoy your hunting, and I'll catch you again on another episode of the Hunting Republic podcast. Cheers, guys.